day after day, day after day, we stuck. No breath, no motion, as idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. Water, water, everywhere, and all the boards did shrink. Water, water, everywhere, nor any drop to drink. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink.
Good evening. My name is Christian Nyampeta, and it's a great honor to be here and to share this moment with you. We just started this specific session with Elsa Mbala, an artist who's also here, who has made a number of compositions in relation to the life and work of Christopher Okigbo. I call it a session, which I hope is a working session, is staged in three or four parts. This is the first part, which had a prelude of the song, and it will be followed by a performance of sorts of the argument of the trial of Christopher Okigbo. This has to do with a certain anguish that I will call some kind of poetic incertitude, which arises from this specific moment in history, in relation also to the study of historical documents which I engaged with during this project. And after the performance of sorts, we'll unpack some of the insurgent forms which the engagement has taken. The accusation. There is a distinction between individualism, universalism, and social collectivism. A great artist is first of all an individualist, secondly a universalist, and only thirdly a social collectivist. Individualism is the deeper loyalty to one's inner being, a capacity to retain a private area of distinctiveness in one's personality. Universalism, on the other hand, is a commitment to the eternal. It is a fusion of near and distant, and the now and the ever. Social collectivism is defined as that complex of loyalties which is tied and which ties the individual to his or her own specific society, which commands his or her affections for his or her kith and kin, and which arouses his or her protectiveness for the soil of his or her ancestors, and which enables him or her to serve, very occasionally to love, his or her people. Socialism, tribalism, and nationalism are all different forms of these bonds of collectivity. If there is a distinction to be made between an artist and a scientist, the duty of the scientists is, firstly, to the universal, secondly, to the social, and only thirdly, to the self. But the duty of the artist is, firstly, to the self, secondly, to the universal, and only thirdly, to the social. The inner creativity of the artist requires a doctrine of the primacy of the self. The aesthetic meaning of the artist requires a supporting doctrine of aesthetic universalism. But it is by serving the universal that the artist should be expected to serve his or her society. The accusation continues. Christopher Okigbo became a distortion of these values. His individualism sometimes had a ring of intellectual arrogance. At the great Festival of Negro Art in Dakar in 1966, which was a great occasion of cultural moment for black people and an excuse for some brilliant, if synthetic, devices of culturalization. There was also real art, deep in its meaning, hungry in its passion, alive in compulsive communication. Who was Africa's greatest poet for the festival? Christopher Okigbo was offered the first prize for poetry. But Christopher Okigbo rejected the first prize for poetry awarded by the Festival Negro of Art. Why? His answer was, "There is no such a thing as Negro art." By refusing this prize, he was refusing to mix art with nationalism. Nevertheless, the same young man who had proclaimed the universality of what is valuable later put on a uniform, helped himself to a gun, and engaged in a fratricidal war. At the Festival of Negro Art in Dakar, Okigbo had refused to dilute art with the milk of nationalism. On the desolate battlefields of Biafra, he was to dilute art with the blood of tribalism. The accusation continues. These are the charges that we are leveling against Christopher Okigbo. A gift of nature was squandered on a battlefield. An imagination which would normally have had another 3 decades of creativity was offered as a sacrifice. Art is a compact between those who are living those who are dead and those who are not, who are to be born. Art owes to the ancestors the nourishment of prior achievement, the cumulative influence of past ages. Art owes to its contemporaries the great experience of immediate revelation, the opportunity of being the first critic of what could be imperishable, the chance to watch a piece of eternity emerge from a womb. Art owes to the future generations a connecting link between the cumulative accomplishments of the past and the emerging potential of the future. If an artist has to sacrifice him or herself for anything, he or she should only sacrifice him or herself to the universal. To die for the truth is martyrdom. To die for knowledge is martyrdom. To die for art is martyrdom. But when a thinker or an artist dies for his or her nation, that is indulgence. He or she has put the politics of the nation before the power of the eternal. He or she may not have broken his or her contract with those already dead, but he or she has broken his or her contract with the living and with those who are to be born. When an ordinary man or woman or a great soldier dies for his or her nation, that is indeed heroism. When the great thinker or the great creator dies for his or her nation, that is escapism. Elders of the ages and of judgment, this is our case against Christopher Okigbo, the recently deceased from Biafra. The defense. Three categories: individualism, universalism, and social collectivism. The defense finds that the accusation, which uses such tripartite distinction, was excessively European. The idea that great creativity derives from individualism was itself not universally true. Much of Africa's art is a collective experience. The legends, the folk songs, the folk tales, the proverbs, the trance of the primeval dance, are all shared moments of being. Much of the poetry was intended to be sung. It was not just the private eye of the reader which is called upon to appreciate poetry. It is more the public ear of the listener. Great art in Europe may have been at best a mode of communication. Great art in Africa is always a flow of interaction. Also, the accusation's description of the artist as being ultimately a person loyal to him or herself as an individual must therefore be dismissed as an alien idiosyncrasy imported from the principles of European aesthetics and wrongly invoked to pass judgment on Okigbo. The accusation also suggests that, critically, the obscurity of Okigbo's lines is a case of subordinating meaning to imagery. traditional African poetry is to be understood if it is to be a collective experience, so the accusation says. There has to be a meaning to what is being formulated in poetic terms. Evocative pictures in words can be a case of brilliant imagery, but not an adequate instance of meaningful interaction. And yet, these criticisms forget that Okigbo's poetry did not consist merely in evocative visual images, but also in the power of sound and the excitement of listening. By paying special attention to the music of poetry, Okigbo has been loyal to the tradition of song in aesthetic experience. The poem in the village had been sung partially because it had also to be an adventure in aesthetic listening. In a language alien to Africa, and sometimes in expressions borrowed from elsewhere, Okigbo had nevertheless been loyal to the primordial fusion of word with sound, of image with music, or simply of song. Against the accusation, the defense also finds that the drawn attention to the great compact between those who are living, those who are dead, and those who are to be born is really a conception which very much echoes the three levels of being in Edmund Burke. A great English Anglo-Irishman, but not necessarily a great exponent of Africa's conceptions of this compact. The past, the present, and the future are not quite as linear as Edmund Burke seems to assume. We are dead, and we are in after Africa. Are we in the past, or are we in the future, or indeed in the present? As suggests to the elders of judgment, in all humility, that what is absent in the accusation's argument, in its conception of the relationship between the living, the dead, and those who are to be born, is the simple and obvious principle of simultaneity. Here we are discussing the Nigerian Civil War at a time when the same subject is being discussed through in different contexts by many on earth. In some respects, the earth is indeed the here before, and we are the hereafter of those who are living. But we are the dead, and the dead to those who are living are supposed to be part of the past. If we are in the hereafter, aren't we part of the future? Or are the past and the future not more than the different sides of the coin of simultaneity? Was Okigbo really supposed to value life for the sake of art? Was life to be valued purely as an instrument for the realization of art? Was there an antithesis between art and life? In the words of Okigbo, poetry is not an alternative to living. It is only one way of supplementing life. And if I can live life to its fullest without writing at all, I don't care to write. So that was the end of a part of the session. And And now follows a vocal promenade through the spatial arrangements, which I've had the pleasure to organize for this occasion. So the work is titled From Left to Night, which is a title shared by tutor artists of mine, namely the Otolith Group and Wendelin van Oldenburg. The title emerged at a collective moment of listening to another artist having a slip of tongue presenting fellow artists who had passed away. And instead of from left to right, it became from left to night. Each of us made a promise that we will all make a work titled From Left to Night. And I see this at the moment as a kind of autopoiesis, at a moment which the construction of poetic meaning can regress to the back, owing to the social and political pressures of the moment. This, I'm speaking from a personal experience whereby I question many of the forms and activities that I've undertaken. So in doing so, I've had the greatest pleasure to work along the team here at Hakave, engaging on the concepts and material of the standard of civilization. Through the works, I've very much learned and engaged with the what you could call a timeline between the, extending from the Paris Conference of 1919 all the way to the present. And in particular, my interest has, as usual, been to find a way of making concepts, ideas, habitable in one way or another. And one way of doing that, of course, is to find motifs which can be translated into architectures in all its spectrum. So then, in particular, the reason I mention a kind of anguish of how to live, how to act, is because, in my understanding, any kind of exposure to violence numbs. So exposure to historical violence also numbs. And therefore, a kind of poetic exercise is can be read in many ways as a very serious undertaking. And so my turn to Christopher Kigbo has to do with the historical moment in which this year is 50 years passed since the Biafra War. And the simple accusation in the trial of Christopher Kigbo is that Christopher Kigbo squandered life. He was insensitive to his own life. He should never have been a soldier in the first place. He should just have stuck to his poems. And at this moment in time when there are indeed many insecurities, I thought that's an interesting extension of what we can consider, again, a timeline. So in engaging with this, I've, again, constructed some kind of permeable environments, including a library, a filmic work, which I consider to be a hosting structure, by which I mean it allows for a variety of forms to, I suppose, cohabit with each other. And in particular, the specific optic or the specific lens which makes this possible is, again, another historical document by William Klein called the Pan-African Festival of Algiers. So in engaging with the histories, I've attempted to somehow animate it, which is to say imbue it with ambitions, the hopes, and the realities, historical and otherwise, including my own hands and documents that have emerged through this engagement. And so in the next 2 days on that screen, there's 3 days, excuse me, there is a continuous sets of imagery which are organized following maybe passages, encounters, and moments which might have taken place here and which might have emerged from the timeline itself. It's also true that I consider the conference to exist not only in a conference hall, but also in the trajectories between and from and towards any of this. So it's a particular moment of gathering of forces which emulates, again, some of the historical documents, such as the film, Pan-African Festival of Algiers of 69, which gathers fugitives and individuals from various corners of the world, including the Black Panthers in Algeria, the MPLA fighters, Amilcar Cabral, Mira Makeba, all of them in one room, as it were, trying to make a song, i.e. trying to activate culture as a weapon against or for the fight against injustice. So the structures in the entrance have that, element of a transitory, as though we're waiting for our turn to speak, or as though we're waiting for our train to depart. But nevertheless, it's also where knowledge can be made or shared and transmitted. I think these were my 20 minutes, and I hope that I've managed to transmit the passions and responsibilities that I've been entrusted with. Thank you very much.